The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading selections from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The theme of the February issue of Our State Magazine is Be Our Guest. Make yourself at home. In North Carolina, hospitality is measured not only by how you are received, but how you reciprocate. Take notice, take care, and our state's innkeepers, neighbors, and hosts will always be there to welcome you in kind. First up is the welcome message entitled The Warmest Reception. It's by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. 5 eggs waited on the kitchen table, warming in the morning light beside a cup of milk and a stainless steel bowl into which 3 cups of flour, swan's down, always swan's down, had already been sifted, piled into a small white mountain. On this day, my grandmother would be making a pound cake. Not for dessert, that was usually pie, chess, or chocolate meringue, but the kind of cake reserved for company, an offering of appreciation for anyone who stopped by. There were never berries on this cake, no dusting of powdered sugar, no whipped cream, no icing at all. My grandmother's pound cake needed no gussying up. Its beauty was in the crumb, tight-grained and tender, a texture beaten into being, the batter climbing up the sides of the mixmaster beaters she always handed to me to lick. The taste of my childhood. I hadn't seen a cake like that in decades. Then one morning at the office, Debbie Rumley, one of our circulation representatives, walked in carrying a pound cake, a simple gesture on an ordinary workday. The sight of it stopped me cold. Same height as the one I remembered, same browned, crispy edges where the top met the pan, same perfect, tight crumb. My grandmother's cake exactly, somehow reborn from Debbie's well-used cookbook from Fairfield United Methodist in High Point. One bite took me straight back to my grandmother's kitchen. Debbie's been at our state for more than 22 years. She met her husband Mark on a mission trip, and together they raised 3 children, years shaped by church suppers and school schedules, those everyday details that hold a family together. When the children grew older, Debbie was ready for something new, and that's when she walked through our doors. At the magazine, she's the voice so many readers hear when they call about subscription renewals, missed issues, changes of address, stories that stirred something in them, articles they clipped years ago and can't quite locate anymore. She opens envelopes, too, stacks of them, many holding handwritten notes from readers who prefer pen and paper to anything online. She answers dozens of calls a day, speaks with each person as if she's known them forever, signing off with her gentle bye-bye, soft as a lullaby. And suddenly, I'm elsewhere, in another house, another time. My grandmother had 3 telephones in her small home, one by her bed, one on the kitchen wall, and one by her favorite chair. She was always ready to answer, always rising to meet a ring, always eager to open the door to someone or someone from church. She lived her life in a state of welcome. I think about her often as I travel North Carolina, catching glimpses of the quiet acts of kindness and hospitality that shape this state. I see her again in people like Debbie, who carry forward the everyday grace my grandmother practiced without effort, the kind that lets someone walk in with a pound cake and for a moment make a whole room feel like home. And now I'll take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Secret Beach Season. In the hush of the off-season, delight in some of our coast's quieter highlights. And the opening photo is of Frisco. It says, winter transforms Frisco into a solitary sanctuary, revealing what locals know. A stark beauty is reserved for those who brave the cold. And you have the dunes with the seagrass, And then the sand and the water. It's probably at sunrise. And so there's a little bit of light in the sky. There's a troop of seagulls flying overhead, and the water looks light blue at some parts from the reflection of the sea from the light. And there's other parts that are dark. And then you see in the left side, there's a string of houses that are behind the sand dunes. And in the far distance, way out, you can see a lighthouse. This one is called Finder's Keeper, this portion. Among Ocracoke's iconic draws are spiraled Scotch bonnets and a steadfast beacon, the oldest operating lighthouse in our state. And there's a hand holding a Scotch bonnet, which is a rare find because they're very delicate and hard to find whole. And in the right page, we have an aerial view of the Ocracoke Lighthouse, which is, of course, completely white, and it's short. As unique as snowflakes, a bounty of seashells amasses on Ocracoke due to its secluded location and shallow ocean floor. The island's south-facing beach harbors conchs from as far away as Florida. As you kneel in the winter's morning light, you just might spot the elusive Scotch bonnet, our state shell, among other briny treasures. The next is First in Flight. This is Killdevil Hills. When snow dusts our state's coast, sandy dunes invite a playful swap. Surfboards yielding to snowboards and sleds. With cold winds at their backs, thrill seekers can take to the air in a fashion that might have impressed the Wright brothers. And should the powder never fall, fear not. Jockey's Ridge Dunes offers a sandy runway year-round. And it shows a picture of someone surfing, quote, the snow at Wright Brothers National Memorial, the site of the first successful airplane flight. Next up is Beauty in the Wild. And this is from Corova Beach. As winter's chill descends, the wild horses roaming our state's barrier islands, like the herds at Corova Beach in Currituck County, adapt. Sleek coats grow shaggy for the season, and the majestic wanderers fill up on cordgrass and sea oats to weather winter's rigors. While there's always an awe in seeing wild horses, empty beaches make sightings all the more enchanting. And I don't know if this is a sunrise or a sunset, but there's a golden orb in the sky and golden and into oranges in the light of the sky, looking out over the waters and the rather calm waters of the ocean. And in the foreground, there's three majestic wild horses. This one is entitled Enduring Courage, and it's based on Wilmington. Among the pines outside Cameron Art Museum, the bronze boundless sculpture rises in remembrance, commemorating the United States Colored Troops, USCT, bravery and sacrifice in the Civil War's 1865 Battle of Forks Road. Artist Stephen Hayes cast the faces of these 11 men from contemporary descendants and reenactors, weaving present lives with the arc of history. Visitors can walk the illuminated path or linger at one of the steel benches to reflect on the sculpture and its lasting significance. To learn more about this sculpture, you can check it out on the internet at cameronartmuseum.org/boundless. At the site of the Battle of Forks Road, the PNC USCT Sculpture Park is the first park created specifically to honor these courageous troops. And you have the tall pine trees surrounded with the various benches that are along the way, and they're all lighted. Locals spot Currie Beach. While many beach town businesses close their doors during the slower season, Freddy's Italian restaurant stays open with a friendly welcome. The familiar crooning of Frank Sinatra spills into the street, ushering in diners to a cozy table set for a heaping plate of lasagna or a pork chop with pecan peach topping, a classic favor that's sure to warm guests up. New owners Jason Smith and Jenny Smith and Jessica Hicks are continuing the restaurant's 30-year legacy of authentic Italian cuisine and red checkered tablecloths. And in this photo, there's a booth, a high-backed booth, with the table is loaded with food. I think there's the pork chop with the peach pecan topping along with the lasagna, and there's a big bowl of salad and bread and a couple of glasses of wine. For more information about this restaurant, you can look them up on the web at freddysitalianrestaurant.com. freddysitalianrestaurant.com. Next up is Fleeting Gifts. This is about Wrightsville Beach. If conditions are just right for a few dreamy days, frozen precipitation may cover the coast. The rush of wind complements the crash of waves, and roadways and docks bask in a glossy glow before the snow, gone as quickly as it arrives, gives way once more to the sand. And we have a view of the Johnny Mercer Pier in Wrightsville Beach, and an aerial view looking at the tip of the island, and then it's either at sunrise or sunset, that same warm glow in the sun, looking out over the water, which is a fairly calm time there. Sheltering Stronghold. This is Atlantic Beach. Hunkered at the end of Bogue Banks, Fort Macon was built to protect Beaufort Inlet from seafaring threats. Even amid today's silent cannons and empty parade ground, it's easy to imagine soldiers keeping a watchful eye on the shore, telling tales of plundering pirates from ages long past. Completed in 1834, this antebellum fort was built by the U.S. Army as a national coastal defense. Carefully restored and with cannon firing demonstrations seasonally, it's now the core of Fort Macon State Park. And you see the rustic, in the photos, you see the cannons above the wall of the fort. And an interesting thing, there's grass planted on top of the fort. And so from the sea, you can't actually tell that there's a fort there because it just looks, it looks like a grass-covered knoll, if you will. And the fort is actually lower. You go down into the fort to see the displays and all the museum information. And you can see the other picture shows here the sort of the rustic brick of the arched the archway, and it's quite interesting. Silent Sentinel, Baldhead Island. Guarding the mouth of the Cape Fear River, Old Baldy, our state's longest-standing lighthouse, spots the setting sun, as it has for more than 200 years. With patchwork stucco reflecting its layered history, Old Baldy stands as a symbol of the island's adaptability and keeps alive its faithful glow. Rising 110 feet near the state's southernmost tip, Old Baldy's 108 steps invite winter's faithful few to take in the view. And this is the setting sun, and you see the light at the picture shows the light at the top glowing. Old Baldy appears to be a concrete with straight walls. It's probably a hexagon shape with flat, eight flat sides. It looks like it's a hexagon. And this is an aerial view looking down on the marshes, and there's trees all around Old Baldy. And you can see in the setting sun in the distance and a few houses in the background looking out over the water. Sparks by the Sea. Oak Island. Before the sea turtles claim its sands for nesting, Oak Island's shore calls for a bonfire's crackling warmth. The beach plays a perfect host to s'mores and hot dogs as the winter waves set the ambiance for comfort and company under the night sky. Bonfires are allowed with a free permit from November 16 through April 30th. Select a spot near Oak Island Lighthouse to savor the dual glows. And it shows a family on blankets in the sand with the sunset in the background with a bonfire that they've created making s'mores. And then the facing page has a picture of the Oak Island lighthouse, which is black at the top, white in the center, and gray at the bottom. Snowy travelers. Soft white feathers glide through eastern North Carolina skies when nature abides by a different type of tourist season. A distinct high-pitched whistle echoes through the cold as tundra swans grace the region's fields, marshes, and ponds, arriving, departing, then arriving once again, as we do too, when our coast calls. Tundra swans feed under a full moon at Pungo Lake and continue on their migratory journey, the National Wildlife Refuges of Lake Matamuskete, Pea Island, and Pocosin Lakes are among the primary sites where these birds overwinter. And the right page shows in flight two swans in flight with a blurry background, but colorful with looks like in the setting sun. And the left picture shows the tundra swans landing to roost and some in the air as well at sunset. You can actually see the sun in the background, superimposed by one of the swans as it's flying by. Our first article from the theme of Be Our Guest is, Lovell House Inn in Boone. And the article is entitled Care and Keeping. With each guest she welcomes, a steward of the historic Lovell House honors the home's legacy and her own family's high country roots. From the moment you leave the rush of King Street and turn past the apple tree by the entrance to the Lovell House Inn, you're welcomed, first by the charming profile of a white farmhouse with a green roof, its wraparound porch, and blanket-draped rocking chairs calling you to sit and stay a while. Then there's the official welcome when you step through the front door. There's no check-in counter, no line to wait in. Only a warm gesture from General Manager Allison Dees to come in, put down your bags, and get settled. In the foyer, decorated with a wormy chestnut trim, she greets you by name and asks you how your travels have been. You tell her honestly because, though you've just met, you can feel that she cares. Dees offers to help with your bags and take you on a tour. She could be in the middle of planning a seating arrangement for a wedding, proofing dough for tomorrow morning's toast, or mapping a back roads drive for a visiting couple, but at this moment her full attention is on you and on sharing the rich history and future of this home. The tour starts beside the front door, at the arched entrance to the first guest room at the inn. Though the house was built in 1875, this room was part of the Lovell family's original cabin, which predates the home and most of Boone itself. Edward F. Lovell, who became a prominent lawyer, purchased land north of town to build the farmhouse where he raised his family and helped shape the future of the region. We call that bedroom right there the birthplace of App State, Dees said. In 1903, the Doherty brothers, who had the little tiny Watauga Academy, came to see their friend E.F. Lovell at his law office. She gestures to the room, once home to E.F.'s practice. The brothers ask him to help them write a charter to acquire state funding for their school. E.F. dictated the charter to his son, William R. Lovell, the only typist in town. As the story unfolds, you can imagine bookcases lining the walls and hear the clack-clack of an old typewriter in the room where history was made. The charter that W.R. typed earned funding that would eventually lead to the formation of Appalachian State University. The tour passes sustainability and ecotourism awards that the inn has won in recent years, a nod to the home's future. Along the way, Dees points out a framed photo in the dining room. Taken in 1940, the image shows W.R. as mayor, welcoming thousands gathered on King Street for the dedication of the town's post office. This stop on Dee's tour is where Lovell history collides with her own. Somewhere in this photo are my grandparents, she says, her eyes scanning the image. One of my aunts, who was training to be a nurse at the time, I think she's right over there. She points to a teenager in a white nursing uniform, her aunt Shirley, one of her mother's 12 siblings. For as long as the Lovell house has stood, Dee's family, the Johnsons, have called the high country home. Before she came to Lovell House, Dees spent time as an assistant innkeeper, a private chef, a professional baker, and homeschooling mother of five. She spent her life taking care of people, building a resume that made her the perfect candidate to be an innkeeper. But it was her Appalachian roots that destined her to care for this house and its guests. The sun peeks into the guest rooms at Lovell House as the scent of bacon crisping rustles the home awake. Behind a door in the dining area, Dees and her sous chef for the morning, App State student Reagan Driggers, turn this room into one of the hardest working kitchens in town. The pair swirl around the island as they prepare today's breakfast. Squash dauphiné soie. Local bacon, lemon chiffon pancakes with strawberries and hand-whipped cream. Dees gives Triggers tips, tasks. Could you grate the Swiss cheese for the dauphinoise? And tips from her years of trial and error in the kitchen. I usually hold the grater at an angle so you can lean it against the bowl, but never hovers or micromanages. This is a kitchen of pinches, sprinkles, and well-eyed spoonfuls. Ingredients are added by heart rather than measuring cups. Dees has always been able to make something out of anything, a skill she inherited from generations of mountain women in her family. 10 minutes west of the Lovell House is the community of Sugar Grove, where her grandmother Texie raised 11 of her 13 children. Mom says that of all 24 or so grandkids, I'm the one most like my grandma. Dees said proudly, she was just happy being a farm mom. Texie brought up her children in a small cabin with no running water or electricity, just 10 minutes from the Lovell House, though worlds away. Once her kids got older, she had just three to take care of. She went and became the school lunch lady, Dees said. She had to have more people to take care of. Dees remembers all the lessons that Texie taught her. Some were told, like how to tat crochet flowers and how to make cobbler cup of self-rising flour, cup of sugar, cup of milk. And others were shown, like how to care for the people and places around you. The people living here in back Appalachia didn't have much, Dees said. If you had a pair of shoes that were worn out, but there was a little bit of leather or there was a shoelace or something that was still good on them, you would put it in a pile to use later. That's the original sustainability. That's reduce, reuse, and recycle in living color. When the current Lovell House owners, Joel and Tonje Olson, hired Dees in April of 2023, she was once again following in Texie's footsteps. Dees raised her five children in nearby Todd with her husband Jim, an advisor for App State's award-winning solar race team. On their 22 acres, she tended gardens and showed her children how to care for the land that raised them. I love being a mom, she says. Always have. Her children were almost grown when the youngest nudged her to find something to keep her busy outside the house. The Olsons had renovated the Lovell House and were looking for an innkeeper, someone who knew the area and could be a steward for the home and its history, and cook a mean breakfast. By the time they bought the Lovell House, the Olsons had been visiting the area from their home in Cornelius for years. Joel is a pioneer of sustainable agriculture combined with solar power farming in North Carolina, and the couple dreamed of transforming the old farmhouse into a sustainable tourism destination. Dees was inspired by the Olsons' vision to bring sustainability back to the property. In preparation for her interview, she dove into the App State archives. "I spent a whole day poring over any records I could find on the Lovell family," she says. "I was so excited to possibly have a job somewhere that was connected with my history." She arrived at the Lovell house with a story of the family memorized. Ideas for zero waste events at the inn, plans to turn the property into a gathering place once more, and full breakfast repertoire, including strawberry shortcake and avocado toast with goat cheese, along with ingredients to cook it. Oh, and this little detail, her grandfather may have milled the chestnut for the trim that lines the foyer. "She takes ownership and cares about the inn," Joel says. "We want people to feel like they're at home and that they're cared for." He also discovered Dee's knack for home cooking, his favorite being her cookies. "The cookies she makes are just fantastic. They're sweet, a little salty, crunchy, but chewy," he says. "The only problem is there's never enough of them for me." After what was supposed to be a 20-minute interview turned into a 4-hour conversation, Dee's got the job. Some early risers follow the scent of bacon and settle into a table by the French doors that separate them from the cool mountain air beyond. They revel in this aroma reserved for B&Bs, the smell of a breakfast you didn't have to cook or leave the house for. Between showing driggers how to fold egg whites into the pancake batter and hand-whipping cream with homemade vanilla sugar, Diaz checks on guests. She asks how they slept, and they can tell her honestly. By now they know she cares. Then she heads outside to the herb garden and snips thyme to top the dauphinois, and before heading back in, gently removes the head of some wispy yellow flowers by the door. "This is oxalis," she said. "It's very lemony, and we're having lemon pancakes." If you've never been to the Lovell house or had the good fortune of being fed by Ray Allison Dees, you might think this little detail would be overlooked by diners. A couple walks into the dining area. James and Mary Nettles are celebrating their 32nd wedding anniversary and the third one they've spent here. Dees emerges to greet them, and they talk like old friends, the couple gushing about their favorite meals from Dees over the year. "I don't know what I would do without being able to take care of other people," Dees said. "I like to feed people's soul. I like to have an actual connection." The people who stay at the Lovell house are looking for a personal touch to their trip. Before they arrive, they might not know about the history of the home and its namesake family, the Olson sustainability efforts, or Dee's deep roots in this place. But as they settle into their stay and experience the thought and care that's infused into every aspect of the inn, they want to know more. They feel that connection, even as they load their bags into their cars, and Dee's wishes them safe travels. Thanks for coming, and take care. For more information about the Lovell House Inn, it's on Old Bristol Road in Boone, and you can find more information at their website, lovellhouseinn.com. That's Lovell, L-O-V-I-L-L, houseinn.com. We've run out of time for today's episode of Fire State Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to join us next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Fire State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, give us a call at 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.